السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
We observe in the Western and developed world today that far-right groups and far-right political parties and nationalist organizations are rapidly gaining influence and importance. The analysts have written a great deal on this and say that the current left-leaning governments do not have a strict enough stance on the immigration policies. And it is because of these immigration policies which has caused the current situation, as has some other factors. However, they say that the breaking point causing all of this is the Muslims. And it is said that Muslims should be banned from entering these countries because they do not integrate into the local society and that they segregate themselves and practice their religion of Islam, which in their view is an extremist religion. Or they say that if Muslims want to live here, then they must give up their religion and their traditions and adopt their customs and lifestyle instead. And if Muslims do not implement this, then they say that it proves that they do not wish to integrate. And that if Muslims maintain or desire to maintain their individual identity and religious values, it equates to them being a threat to the country. However, these are absurd and ignorant statements. They say that the minarets of the mosques of Muslims are a threat to us, and the hijab the Muslim women wear are a threat to us. And the Muslim women or men not shaking our hands is a threat to us, and so on. In the UK, there are hardly any politicians who express such sentiments. However, there is a great clamour raised in other countries on this issue. on a daily basis, we hear statements given by politicians on this issue. Moreover, they try to prove their point by saying that proof of Muslims being a threat to us can be established by the fact that extremism and lawlessness have reached their peak in Muslim countries. And that the majority of the attacks by extremists in Western countries are also being perpetrated by Muslims. But whilst everything else they say is simply anti-Islamic rhetoric, sadly, this particular statement is true, that there is extremism in Muslim countries, and there are also attacks that are committed here. And this allegation has also been handed to them on a plate by Muslims themselves. As I have said, this is because terrorism and extremism are greatly prevalent in Muslim countries, and attacks do take place here as well. And this is irrespective of the fact that extremist and rebel groups in Muslim countries obtain their weapons from Western nations. Also, certain powers have very shrewdly strengthened the hands of these groups, so that these groups then are able to fulfill their objectives, which leads to increased anti-Islamic sentiments and maliciousness against Islam. On the one side, governments are supported in overt and covert ways, whilst on the other side, they provide assistance to the rebel and extremist groups through some means or the other. However, without this support, no government, no group would be able to sustain their fight for such a long period of time. It is with regret that whenever Muslims are inflicted with harm, it is always through the actions of Muslims themselves. And because of their own schemes, their rebellions, usurping the rights of one another, and giving precedence to their own interests over the national interests. And because they have forgotten the teachings of Islam and are ignoring their true purpose. And instead of the Muslim rulers, politicians and scholars running greedily after materialistic pursuits and seeking respect and honor from only the world, they should have focused on improving their spiritual condition and following the commandments of Allah the Almighty and His Messenger. The Muslim scholars have, under the guise of religion, played and continue to play their part in pushing the Muslim community at large further into abyss of darkness. Instead of reflecting on circumstances of the time and the promises made by Allah the Almighty and the urgent need the situation called out for, and instead of searching of that person who was foretold to appear by Allah the Almighty, who said that this person would restore faith even if it ascended to the Pleiades, i.e. constellation of stars, meaning if faith was completely lost from the earth, and he would re-establish the structure of Islam and rejuvenate the faith of Muslims. However, not only are they negligent of this, but rather, they fiercely oppose the one sent by Allah the Almighty. In fact, they have gone to the extent to oppose him wherever they can in Muslim countries, and even amongst non-Muslim countries. They have transgressed in enmity and malice to such a degree which knows no bounds. In fact, they are exceeding in all limits in their cruelty and oppression of the followers of the one who was promised to appear by Allah the Almighty. In Pakistan, the immense wave of persecution and cruelty has already existed under the protection of the law. For many years, rather many decades, I should say, this oppression has persisted. In some other Muslim countries also, Ahmadis are the victims of hardships by people being fearful of the mullah, i.e. the Muslim clerics, and cruel officials. And in other places, the situation has relatively improved. But who knows for how long? May Allah bestow His grace, and may Ahmadis always remain in safety. However, nowadays this persecution is intensifying in Algeria. The police is capturing the Ahmadis, and the courts issue verdicts as they please and imprison Ahmadis. Some Ahmadis are being issued with punishment of 1 to 3 years of jail time. And all of this is only because they said that they have accepted the Imam who was foretold to appear. And they accepted him because it was the instruction of Allah the Almighty and His Messenger to do so. There are over 200 Ahmadis who are currently either in jail or who have either been punished or who are awaiting verdict on their punishment in police custody, or they have been put in detention. However, all of them have professed that despite these hardships they are facing, they will never renounce their faith. Thus, when an Ahmadi announces that he or she will give precedence to all the commandments of Allah the Almighty and His Messenger over all else, and that they are prepared to make the greatest of sacrifices for this, then no one can hinder them away from their faith. However, those who are committing cruelties in the name of Islam and in the name of Allah the Almighty and His Messenger, they should remember that Allah watches over the oppressed, and the prayers of the persecuted are reaching His throne. When the court of God issues its verdict, then both this world and the next world will come to complete ruin for the oppressors. Therefore, they should fear the decree of Allah the Almighty, and instead of committing transgressions upon the Ahmadis, they should look at their own conditions. They should see that by becoming a means to defaming the teachings of Islam, are they fulfilling the purpose of life outlined by Allah the Almighty? If they truly held a pain and passion for Islam, that is, the Muslim scholars who issues fatwas, i.e. religious edicts, followed by rulers and the judges of the courts, then they would have united in the face of the current predicament of Islam, where it is being assaulted with criticisms from all directions. They should ponder over the fact that on one hand, Allah the Almighty has promised for Islam to spread in the entire world. But here we see the opposite happening, and Islam is being defamed by these actions. So what is the reason for this? Is victory going to be achieved through the extremist and terrorist groups? Did Allah the Almighty ever say that through bloodshed and massacre Islam is to be spread? Does Islam not possess the arguments and reason through which it can be propagated? Will Islam be served only through killing with the sword opposing sects and innocent people of other religions, as well as innocent children, women, and the elderly? If this is their mentality, and we see that many of the Muslim scholars are committing extremist acts which reflect that this is their way of thinking, then they are the people who disobey the injunctions of Allah the Almighty and His Messenger. These people will never gain success through this approach. But indeed, such actions will most certainly make them liable to the chastisement of Allah the Almighty. Whilst they continue to perpetrate cruelties against Ahmadis and wrongdoings in the name of Islam, and believe that they will achieve success based on their governments and power, they should remember that one day they will have to present themselves before Allah the Almighty, and they will have to answer for the oppression and persecution. The state of the Muslims at the present time is a very strange one. On the one side is the group of the so-called Maulvis, and also the extremists and terrorists, who in the name of Islam are causing strife in all directions against both Muslims and non-Muslims. On the other side are those who, in reaction to such groups and under the Western and worldly influence, have become disconnected with religion. And so, rather than presenting the excellences of the teachings of Islam confidently, they are either disconnected or are afraid. Instead of advocating the qualities of the teachings of Islam, and refuting the discourses of worldly people, they readily agree with them. And they present the wrong interpretations and explanations of Islamic teachings to try and justify what they believe is its actual meaning in order to placate them. For them, the fear of the world supersedes the fear of Allah the Almighty. Similarly, there are some political leaders who, even if they do not agree with the Maulvis, still fear losing their seats of power and are afraid lest the Maulvis incite people against them. Thus, such individuals have no link with religion whatsoever. Out of cowardice and to fulfill their dominant worldly objectives, they choose to remain silent. Albeit every group among the Muslims who has rejected the one sent by Allah the Almighty has become far removed from the commandments of Allah the Almighty and His Messenger. In terms of Maulvis who use the name of religion to expand their business, they hurl the allegation against the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wassalam that, God forbid, he claimed to be the Messiah and Mahdi to start up a business for financial gain. Whereas, the truth is Now, these Maulvis have found an easy way to earn money as a business, which is to simply oppose the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam. They have no argument, and thus you will often observe that they simply resort to hurling verbal abuse. Nonetheless, either it is those who use religion in order to make financial gains, or those who give less importance to religion due to their worldly pursuits. In short, all of these people are just Muslim by name and have no affiliation with the true teachings of Islam. In such circumstances, Ahmadis need to reflect over this, because they have accepted the Imam of the age, and therefore a huge responsibility has been placed upon them. The opponents are going to continue to perpetrate cruelties against us, and eventually so will those who have drifted away from faith and do not believe in Allah the Almighty, when we speak out against the ill practices which they commit in the name of freedom, or if they seek to enact laws for those practices. When we speak against them, that is when they will also begin to oppose us. In such circumstances, will we become fearful and remain silent? Or will we falter in our faith and agree with whatever they say? If we are to do this, then what is the benefit of entering into the bayat of the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam? The promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam came and told us that we must adhere to the commandments of Allah the Almighty and follow the example of his Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. We must never lose faith and nor create disorder on the earth. But along with this, we must also remember that we have to propagate the message of Allah the Almighty to every part of the world, so that the unity of God be established and the beautiful teachings of Islam are spread all over the world, and so that the majority of the people of the world are convinced of its teachings. In order to accomplish this, the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam stated that Allah the Almighty has given us the guidance in the Holy Quran, and we must adhere to it, which is meaning, call unto the way of thy Lord with wisdom and goodly exhortation, and argue with them in a way that is best. Thus, instead of raising the sword like the so-called ulama, i.e. the scholars, and as other extremists do, it is necessary that we use sound arguments for the purpose of tabligh, i.e. preaching, in order to spread the beautiful teachings of Islam and to teach the wisdom behind the Islamic injunctions. Nowhere has Allah the Almighty stated to spread Islam with the sword. Certain ill practices which religion deems to be unlawful, and in fact according to religion are not only unlawful but they are immoral and sinful acts, are becoming widespread in some of the developed countries where the laws of the land seek to safeguard those practices. Against such practices, if we are going to speak against them. But we feel that the concerned party is going to take offense and become angry at what we have to say regarding those practices, then we can temporarily avoid speaking against it and simply walk away by conveying the greeting of peace, as that will be the most wise act to do at the time. However, this is not because we have become fearful due to a legislation being passed, or that we simply agree with whatever they say because the party in question will become angry. If someone were to become fearful or come under their influence and agree with what they say, then this is something completely wrong, and such a person will also be partaking in that sin. The Promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam states that the verse, "and argue with them in a way that is best," does not mean that we should become so weak in our stance and compromise in agreeing to something that is completely wrong. Thus, wisdom does not mean that one should show cowardice. Rather, wisdom is to express the truth without creating any kind of disorder. Or one should express himself in such a way that it does not create any disorder, and yet he does full justice to the message he wishes to convey. Thus, a mu'min, i.e. a believer, should be aware of the difference between showing cowardice and wisdom. The commandments of Islam, which deem a particular practice to be unlawful, must clearly be declared as unlawful. But at the same time, we must not take the law into our own hands and create disorder. Further expounding on this, the Promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam states, "When you engage in debate, then do so with wisdom and goodly exhortation in a civilized and gentle manner." Indeed, in this era there are countless ignorant and foolish Maulvis who, owing to their ignorance, believe that it is an act of great virtue to spread Islam through the jihad of the sword. They lead a life of obscurity and hypocrisy. However, this is a completely erroneous concept, and the Holy Quran cannot be held blameworthy for their misconception. If they say such things, then this is a misconception on their part, and the Book of Allah the Almighty cannot be blamed for this. The Promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam further states, "The truth does not require the use of force. In fact, using force proves that the spiritual arguments are weak. Allah the Almighty revealed to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, meaning that have patience then, as had the messengers of strong determination. In other words, he should show more patience than the collective patience of all the previous messengers of strong determination put together. Then Allah the Almighty further stated that there is no compulsion in religion. He then stated, meaning that call unto the way of thy Lord with wisdom and goodly exhortation. And he also stated, in other words, that mu'min are those who suppress their anger and forgive those who perpetrate cruelties against them. And they do not respond to indecency in an indecent manner. The Promised Messiah states, "Therefore, can such a God reveal a teaching wherein it states to kill those who deny your faith, and steal their wealth and loot their homes? In fact, the initial wars of Islam were fought because it was in an injunction of Allah the Almighty, so that those who raised the sword to perpetrate cruelties died by the sword, and they faced the consequences of their actions." The Promised Messiah alayhi salam further states, "Where does it state that one should go around killing the disbelievers with the sword? This is a concept that has been introduced by the ignorant Maulvis and the unwise Christian clerics and has no truth to it whatsoever. Or it is the Muslim clerics who claim to be the so-called advocates for the cause of Islam, or those who oppose Islam make such claims, i.e. that kill the disbelievers. However, it does not mention this anywhere. Thus, this is the true teaching of Islam, which other Muslims do not follow, because either they do not have the desire to spread the message of Islam, or, as the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam stated, that this idea has taken root because of the foolish and ignorant Maulvis. However, we must propagate the teachings of Islam among the Muslims and non-Muslims alike. Thus, every Ahmadi should pay attention to this in their respective social circles. Because previously, these people harbored an extreme view of the Islamic teachings within them, but they led a life of hypocrisy and duplicity. But now there are certain groups who openly voice their views. And it is not only against the non-Muslims, but they are attacking fellow Muslims and defaming the name of Islam. They are all united in their opposition against Ahmadis, but now the different sects and groups are fighting one another also. And so, in such circumstances, the responsibilities of an Ahmadi have significantly increased. The promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam states, "Remember that a person who is harsh and becomes enraged cannot utter wise and meaningful words. The heart that flies into a rage and quickly gets out of control is deprived of wisdom and understanding." The lips of the unrestrained and foul mouth become unfortunate and kept away from the spring of perceptiveness. The promised Messiah further states, "The rage and wisdom cannot coexist. The one who rages in a fit of fury has a dull mind and brain, and he is never given victory or success in any field. Anger is half insanity, and when anger becomes full fury, it can become complete insanity. Anger is half of insanity, and when this intensifies, then it can transform into complete insanity. Therefore, when a person becomes angry and insane, then he cannot utter words of wisdom. And this is precisely what we observe in the non-Ahmadis. The Muslim clerics display this kind of conduct everywhere, and this in fact is also defaming the name of Islam. They are not just against us, but when we do tabligh, I preach, and propagate the true teachings of Islam to the world, then the opponents of Islam always say that though you may be peaceful, but the majority of the other Muslims do not consider you as Muslims. Therefore, how can you be considered as the representatives of Islam? Therefore, in these circumstances, our challenges have significantly increased. And every Ahmadi must realize that their responsibilities in that their every action and deed is a reflection of Islam. If a person is not doing active tabligh, even then his every word and action should be conveying the message of Islam. And whilst doing tabligh, we must keep in mind the wisdom of Hazrat Ali radiallahu ta'ala anhu. He stated that the heart has certain desires and inclinations. As a result of this, at times, the heart is willing to listen to something, and on other occasions it is not. At times a person is ready to listen, and sometimes he does not wish to listen to anything. Thus, one should enter into the hearts of people while taking one's inclinations of the heart into consideration. Therefore, one should assess the situation at the time as to whether the person is willing to listen to you and then speak accordingly. Thus, we need to adopt this kind of wisdom. The promised Messiah, alayhi salatu wassalam, has also given guidance regarding this. He states, one should ponder over what they wish to say and keep it concise. Delving into long debates and deep discussion has no benefit. He further states, one should convey his point in a few words which goes straight into the ear. And if ever the opportunity arises in the future, then he can expound upon it. However, all of this is only possible when one is constantly in contact with the other person. Those who oppose faith seek to challenge the laws of God and in the name of freedom are trying to portray their ill practices as moral. However, we must respond to them with wisdom and by remaining constantly in contact with them.
باتوں کو اخلاق کے زمرے میں لانے کی جو مذہب مخالف طاقتیں کوشش کر رہی ہیں
ان کی ہم For instance, in Australia, there are certain people whose enmity has grown to such an extent that they say that Muslims who do not shake hands with the opposite gender should be expelled from the country. ان کا توڑ کر سکتے ہیں اب آسٹریلیا میں However, Ahmadis should address this issue with wisdom in their respective environments and their social circles. Or certain people oppose the hijab, and in certain other countries they are against the construction of mosques and minarets. A politician from Holland said that all the Muslims should be expelled, or all the Muslims belonging to a particular country should be expelled. And the president of USA also wants to ban Muslims of certain countries. And even though the anti-Islamic movements are behind all of this, and some Muslim groups are also assisting them. However, the majority of the people are unaware of the true teachings of Islam. Therefore, all those jamaats that have a substantial amount of members, where they have an opportunity to spread the message in an effective manner, should organize effective programs which explain the peaceful message of Islam alongside their traditional programs. In the countries where anti-Islamic movements are gaining momentum, if there is anyone that can work in an organized manner to break their might, it is the Ahmadiyya community. The other Muslims are simply not working towards highlighting the beauty of Islam and spreading its message. They do not have the systematic organization, and nor do they possess the knowledge to do so. However, this responsibility has been decreed for those who have accepted the promised Messiah, alayhi salatu wassalam. Therefore, every single person must understand the importance of this task. On one occasion, the promised Messiah, alayhi salatu wassalam, states, no matter how fiercely falsehood opposes the truth, the might and power of truth equally gather pace. The promised Messiah alayhi salam further stated, this is a natural phenomenon, in that the more force used to oppose the truth, the more it begins to glisten and radiate its glory. The promised Messiah continues, we have experienced with this fact and observed that wherever we have been vociferously opposed, in the same place a jamaat becomes established. Whereas in places where people listen and remain silent, there is not much progress in that area. Thus, wherever we face opposition from the Muslims, we see that it opens a way to introduce the Jamaat, and thus there is further progress. In Algeria, perhaps our efforts to spread the message of Ahmadiyyat and introduce the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam may not have given us exposure to the same degree as we have received from these lawsuits and the newspapers that have written against us. And subsequently, this is having a positive impact on those who have a virtuous nature. Similarly, in non-Muslim countries, wherever there is a wave of anti-Islamic sentiments, the Jamaat should do more to highlight the peaceful message of Islam. As I have mentioned, that we must strive to spread the peaceful message of Islam. And perhaps this may lead to further opposition from certain factions. And certain examples have come to light, in which it is becoming evident that the opposition is increasing from the non-Muslims as well as certain Christian groups. For example, is in Western Germany, the nationalists say many things against the Jamaat. However, this is also having a positive effect on those people who possess virtuous hearts, as well as increasing the awareness of the Jamaat. Thus, instead of being petrified by this, we should feel happy and increase the speed of our efforts. Every Ahmadi should become a part of spreading the message through their actions and habits. The promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam states, in order to safeguard Islam and for the truth to become manifest, the first thing one must do is to become a model of what a Muslim is. And the second aspect to this is to spread the excellences and distinctions throughout the world. May Allah the Almighty grant us the opportunity to live our lives according to this. May we become the personification of a true Muslim. And despite all the opposition, may we become those who exhibit the attributes and excellences of Islam and spread them to the world. May every single one of us become those individuals who safeguard the true Islam and exhibit the truth. After the prayers, I will lead some funeral prayers in absentia. The first funeral prayer is of Maulana Hakim Muhammad Deen Sahib of Qadian, who was the son of respected Azizuddin Sahib. He passed away on 15th March 2017 at the age of 97. To Allah we belong and to Him shall we return. His paternal grandfather was Hazrat Hakim Maulvi Naziruddin Sahib, who was part of the 313 companions mentioned by the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam in two of his books, which was Aina Kamalat Islam and in the appendix of Anjami Atam. His paternal grandfather was the headmaster of a madrasa in Kangra, and in accordance with the prophecy of the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wasalam, a devastating earthquake struck in Kangra in 1905. However, his school and all students within the madrasa were miraculously saved. Hakim Muhammad Deen Sahib was born in 1920 in Mukeria, which is situated in the district of Hoshiarpur. He completed his matriculation exam from Lahore and intermediate level from Qadian, obtaining a Munshi Fazil degree, i.e. a higher level of education prior to university. He went on to study in a medical college in Lahore for 2 years and also gained his degree in medicine from there. From 1939 to 1944, he served in the Department of Railways as the assistant station master, and under the Life Devotee Scheme launched by Hazrat Muslim radiallahu ta'ala anhu, Hakim Sahib also submitted his application to devote his life in 1943. However, at the time he was advised by Hazrat Muslim radiallahu ta'ala anhu to continue with the line of work he was working in and also to continue his preaching endeavors. Nevertheless, having heard the sermon of Hazrat Muslim radiallahu ta'ala anhu, it was his desire to dedicate his life and serve as a missionary. And owing to this desire of his, and also writing constantly to Hazrat Muslim radiallahu ta'ala anhu, his request was eventually accepted, and he was assigned as the missionary in charge of Bombay. Initially, he worked as an assistant to Maulana Abdul Rahim Nair Sahib. And then later, he was made the missionary in charge. Overall, he had the opportunity to serve for 25 years in the field of preaching. Towards the end of 1972, he returned to Qadian and was initially assigned as a teacher in Madrasatul Ahmadiyya, after which he served for 12 years as his headmaster. He had the opportunity to serve as the head of the Qaza Board, the head of Majlis Insarullah of India, and member, and then later Sadr, the head of Majlis Karpurdas. He was also made Nazim, in charge of Waqf-e Jadid. And from 2011 to 2014, he had the opportunity to serve as Sadr of Sadr Anjuman Ahmadiyya. In this respect, he served in various capacities spread over a number of years. He also had the opportunity to perform Hajj-e Badal, i.e. Hajj carried out on the behalf of another person. He would recite the Holy Quran in an excellent manner and had a strong voice. Initially, his wasiyat, i.e. will, was set at 1/10, which he then stipulated at 1/7, and eventually at 1/5. He was a very selfless person and always served with the utmost humility and selflessness. He served under those that were very junior to him, yet he remained ever obedient in serving under those missionaries that were his junior. May Allah the Almighty elevate the status of the deceased. At present, three of his daughters are in Pakistan and three are in India. He has two sons, both of whom are currently working for the Jamaat. May Allah the Almighty also enable them the opportunity to fulfill their oath of allegiance with loyalty and sincerity. The second funeral prayer is of Fazl-e-Ilahi Anwari Sahib, who was the son of Master Imam Ali Sahib. He passed away in Germany on 4th March 2017 at the age of 90. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. He was born in Beira on 16th April 1927. And in 1946, he completed his FSC examination from Talimul Islam College in Qadian. And in 1947, he devoted his life for the service of Islam. And after that, he obtained his BSc from Government College Lahore in 1950. And in 1951, he gained admission into Jamiatul Mubashirin, which is a 5-year course to train missionaries. And after completing this, he had the opportunity to serve for a lengthy duration. In 1956, he was sent as a missionary to Ghana, where he served until 1960. And between 1960 and 1964, he served as a teacher in Jamia Ahmadiyya Rabwa. From 1964 to 1967, he served as the missionary for West Germany. And in 1968, he was sent to Nigeria, where he remained until 1972. In 1972, he returned again to Germany and served there until 1977. In 1979, he served as the secretary of Hadikatul Mubashirin and as the additional Nazir Islaw Irshad Talimul Quran. In 1982, he was sent as a missionary to the Gambia, and in 1983, he was transferred to Nigeria and served there until 1986. In 1986, he then returned back to Pakistan, where he was assigned as a teacher in Jamia Ahmadiyya Rabwa until 1988. He then served in Wakalat al-Tasnif. He eventually retired in 1988 and moved to Germany. During the disturbances of 1974, he assisted the Jamaat greatly by making arrangements for Ahmadis to move there. And also organized for their immigration process. And this was highly appreciated by Hazrat Khalifatul Masih III. And many of the earlier settlers have written to me. For example, Irfan Khan Sahib states that he treated us in the manner a father would. In those days, the financial situation of the Jamaat was not exceptional, and he was always mindful if we wasted any water. During the ablution, he would stand behind us and note whether or not we were wasting any water. He ensured that the youth, the majority of the people that migrated at that time were young, remained firmly attached to the Jamaat, and ensured for their moral training. He was very content with what he had. May Allah the Almighty elevate the status of the deceased. And also enable his progeny to continue his virtuous deeds. He had also written a few books about the Darvesh of Qadian. The third funeral prayer will be of Ibrahim ibn Abdullah Ghuzul Sahib, who was the father of Jamal Ughzul Sahib of Morocco. He passed away on 10th March 2017 at the age of 81. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. He performed the bayt, i.e. the oath of initiation, in the year 2000, and his wife accepted Ahmadiyyat before him and was the one who encouraged him to perform the bayt. He would watch MTA regularly, and he was regular in his 5 daily prayers and had a special love for the Holy Quran. He was very kind-hearted and would show compassion to all of his family members. He was never harsh in the upbringing of his children. He always kept his extended family together. He was extremely generous and would show kindness to his relatives. When he was financially stable, he would help his brothers who were less privileged by including them in his trade business and try to improve their situation. Hospitality was one of his special attributes, and he would always welcome fellow Jamaat members happily. He was extremely famous for his honesty even from an early age, to the extent that when he was in employment in his youth days, the owner would entrust him with all the trading goods and capital to the amazement of all his co-workers. Towards the latter part of his life, during the period of his illness, he would continuously inquire about the prayers. May Allah the Almighty elevate the status of the deceased and grant steadfastness to all those who survived him and enable them to remain attached to Khilafat and the Jamaat.
Alhamdulillah, nahmaduhu wa nasta'inuhu wa nastaghfiruhu. ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله ونشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله عباد الله رحمكم الله إن الله يأمر بالعدل واللسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون اذكروا الله يذكركم وادعوه يستجب لكم ولذكر الله أكبر.